I invite you to open up your scripture to Numbers chapter 11 as we continue this story of the Israelis leaving Mount Sinai on their way to the Promised Land. There's some fine points of chronology here that I need to talk to you about today. We know that it is the second year of the Exodus when these events are taking place. We know that Israel left Egypt in the spring of the previous year, got to Mount Sinai at the end of that same spring, and then they spent the balance of that particular year all over the summer and the fall and into the winter and very early spring of the next year, getting the tabernacle up and running the way God had instructed Moses during his 2 40-day periods on the mountain. They dedicated that temple or that tabernacle to use in the spring of the second year of the Exodus, just in time for the anniversary of the Passover. And then God gives them all sorts of rules and regulations for the priests and the Levites to know exactly how to have the Israelis act. And then here we are in the second month, on the 20th day, the signal trumpets that have been recently made are sounded because God's presence is rising up off of the tabernacle, and they know by that it's time to move to the next place. So that's what we were talking about yesterday as we closed up, is that they leave during the daylight hours of the 20th of the second month. They travel a total of 3 days. That would be the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and then make camp again on the weekend, for the weekend or the Sabbath rest of that first journey. And we know, because the book of Numbers later has details of where all these major encampments are, that that encampment is called Kibroth Hattaavah. And there's a great big difficulty that's coming out of that name that we'll get to later. But in Numbers chapter 11, we get the understanding that there must have been a non-tabernacle encampment somewhere during that first 3 days journey. And what I mean by that is the tabernacle was not set up overnight. The Israeli people just simply rested temporarily and then got up and moved the next day. And they never set up the tabernacle until God's presence settled down, indicating this is where the tabernacle is supposed to be set up next. So we discover that from the get-go, from the very beginning of their departure from Mount Sinai, the Israelis, at least some of them, are causing trouble. So this is what it reads at Numbers chapter 11. The people complained in the hearing of He Who Is about their misfortunes. And when He Who Is heard it, His anger was kindled, and the fire of He Who Is burned among them and consumed some outlying parts of the camp. So apparently, some sort of gripe session begins out in the fringes of the camp. Now, we know who's out there in those fringes. That is all of the non-ethnic Israelis that came out of Egypt with them. They're just kind of hanging on because, hey, the Israelis leaving was their ticket out of Egypt. So they're out there, not necessarily all that committed to God, but still having to live by His rules. We've also got people who have been marked by God with leprosy, because that's where their encampment is out. We've got people who are going through some sort of sickness, who have some sort of condition where they are counted as unclean at the moment. So all of those people are in the fringes of the camp. So that's where God's judgment hits. So that must be where the problem was. So my guess is this is some of the non-ethnic Israeli, or the those that are not ethnic Israelis that are griping because they didn't want to do things the way God's directing it to happen. So fire of God breaks out, people die, scares other people. Verse 2, then the people cried out to Moses. Moses prayed to He Who Is, and the fire died down. So the name of that place was called Tabara, because the fire of He Who Is burned among them. So that Tabara is not in the list of encampments in Numbers 33, verses 16 and 17, which is about the departure from Sinai. So that's why I say this must have been one of those just quick overnight stops on those first three travel days. And so we have trouble already starting. Then we have arrived at the first official stopping point, which is going to get the name Kibroth Hatavah. And we'll talk about what that name means later. But this is what happens there, starting in verse number 4. Now, the rabble that was among them had a strong craving. Now, this rabble, that's the way to describe the hangers-on, the non-committed, ethnic Israeli group that's around the fringes of the encampment. And they've got this strong craving. What type of strong craving? Well, the people of Israel also wept again and said, "Oh, that we had meat to eat." So apparently, the rabble was griping about the diet that these guys are on. Now, what are they eating? They're eating meat that is part of the sacrificial procedures. But other than that, it's pretty much the bread that's being made from the manna every day. And that's their diet. And it's got all the needs nutritionally, because God's providing that through the manna. But it's the same taste day after day after day. And they've been at this for a little, right around a year now that they've been receiving this manna. And so it's not just the rabble that's griping about the food being monotonous. It's also the Israelis that start griping. Verse 5, we remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing. Because everywhere in Egypt that people live, there's the Nile or some tributary of the Nile. And so there's fish in great abundance. And so even the slave population could fish and get fish for most of the meals each week. So they're like, man, at least we had fish out here. There's not even hardly any water other than this water coming from the rock. We remember the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. Because you see, they had their little cottage gardens as slaves where they could grow using water from the irrigation system of the Nile to grow these different greens. Well, they're out in the desert. They're not growing those things right now. And now they're going to start traveling. So you can't wait for a crop to grow and travel at the same time. So they're griping about our diets. We don't have any of the stuff we used to enjoy, even as slaves. Verse 6. But now our strength is dried up and there's nothing at all but this manna to look at. Uh-oh. Every time I tell this story, I say, you know, it's never, ever, ever a good idea to criticize the one that's providing you food. Not a good choice. So here they are griping about God's provision. Now, remember what this manna is. Verse 7 says, the manna was like coriander seed. That's its, it looks like that in its structure. It's kind of a beaded look, like a little round look, because when the dew forms its little beads of moisture on the flat surfaces during the night. As the day starts to approach, God replaces that little dew drop with some flakiness that is called manna, or what is it? So that's what it looks like. It's like a little dewdrop-shaped bit of flakiness. And its appearance like that of bdellium, which means it's got kind of a golden look to it. And the people went out and gathered it and ground it in handmills or beat it in mortars and boiled it in pots and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. There's another place that talks about there was a slight honey taste to it as well. So this is a grain substitute provided miraculously by God every single day of the week except the Sabbath. And it's always just enough for each person to get one day's ration of necessary food. And it tastes good, and it's very nutritional. It provides everything they need to live off every day. So God is providing everything they need. Verse 9, when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell with it. So these guys are griping about God providing the miraculous food. Not that he's providing it, but because it's the same thing over and over and over again. And this is a bad idea, folks. You never gripe about the one providing your food. Well, Moses heard the people weeping throughout their clans and everyone at the door of his tent and the anger of he who has blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. So he knows what's coming. He knows everybody, they're not just simply weeping, they're crying little sob story things for themselves. Oh, how bad it is for us. Oh, how sad it is that we never get anything to eat but manna. Maybe wouldn't it be good if we could have some fish or some cucumbers or something like that? Oh, nothing but this manna every day. Well, sooner or later, God's not going to be putting up with that anymore. And Moses is upset too, because that's rude. Let's just be factual about that. It is rude when you gripe about somebody that is generously donating stuff to you. And so Moses was also upset because he's getting the grumping directed toward him. So Moses said to he who is, why have you dealt ill with your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you lay the burden of this people on me? So he's starting to feel sorry for himself too. Did I conceive all this people? Did I give them birth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land that you swore to give to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? For they weep before me and say, give us meat that we may eat. I am not able to carry all this people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, just kill me at once, if I found favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness. So everything starts to fall apart shortly after they leave Mount Sinai, because everyone is upset that everything has been pretty much the same for a long period of time. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, as I'm teaching this in my basement into my recording apparatus, we're still in this COVID-19 pandemic, and everybody is worn out about having to wear face coverings and not be able to do this thing or that thing or the other thing that might be dangerous to the health of other people around them. And people are getting tired and they're getting fractious and they want to fight and argue and complain and all of that. And it kind of reminds me of what happens when you have a bunch of people that are kind of stuck in the same rut for a long period of time and not able to do what they want to do, like the Israelis. And that wears heavily on the leadership. And I've seen that too, both government leadership, medical leadership, and in church leadership, where leaders are getting hassled by both sides of the equation. So Moses feeling put upon. And so he has his own little pity party and tells God, you know what? I didn't want this job to begin with. Why don't you just kill me and get it over with rather than making me do this? And this is something that didn't need to happen. This is where we're going to do a little retro thing. You remember about a year earlier when Moses and the Israelites first arrived at Mount Sinai. Moses got a visit from his father-in-law. This would be Jethro, the Ruel of Midian, that is, the shepherd of God for Midian. And he sees Moses trying to take on the load of all the gripe sessions of the Israelites each and every day. He'd get up in the morning, he'd go to his little special tent, and people would come to him one right after another. He'd have them lined up for, I don't know if it was miles, but enough that it would take his full day up. And Moses would have to try to judge between cases. And Ruel saw this and said, "What are you doing?" And Moses says, "I'm trying to solve people's problems." And Ruel told him at the time, "If you do this, it's going to wear you and the people out. Let me tell you what you need to do." And then he gives him advice. And I would like to share with you the advice that he gave him back at that time. This is from Exodus chapter number 18 and starting at verse 19. So he told Moses this a year before Moses had his little crisis that we're talking about. "Now obey my voice. I'm going to give you advice and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their case to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the ways in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from among all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. Let them judge the people at all times. And then every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. And so it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you will do this, God will direct you. You will be able to endure. All this people also will go to their place in peace." And I told you at the time when we were reading this story about Jethro's visit, that I don't think Moses listened to his father-in-law at that time. I think he blew him off. I think he postponed it because he thought he could handle it. Well, here we are about a year later, and he hasn't been able to handle it. And he's having a leadership meltdown, so much so that he tells God, "Just kill me and get it over with." So he is at the depths of leadership depression. And those of you that are in leadership roles, you know what I'm talking about. There are those times when you get frustrated. It feels like everything's depending on you and everybody's griping that no matter what you do, no matter what justification you give from Scripture, you get griped at from one side or the other, sometimes both, and you just want to chuck it. You know what? During this COVID-19 pandemic, I have heard more than one preacher talk about wanting to give up because they're getting hassled from both sides of the debate about COVID-19 and how churches should be responding to it. And that hurts my heart. And I'm going to just share it with you, folks. I also have got frustrated by this and have, in the back of my mind, just momentarily thought, wouldn't it be easier for me to just chuck it all and go work in a factory somewhere and not have to put up with this garbage? Well, that's not my calling, though. My responsibility is to God and to God's people. And so what I'm supposed to be doing is what Moses was supposed to be doing, and that is depending on other people to help with the load. This leadership model that Ruel gave to Moses is the leadership model that would work in churches as well. So that you've got somebody that's responsible for every 10 families, and then you've got groups of 10 families that are then responsible underneath the leadership of somebody that's over five of those groups of 10. And then if your church is even bigger, then you've got somebody that is over 10 groups of 10 to make sure everybody is taken care of. This leadership multi-level model works well if we'll just put it into practice. Now, of course, we need volunteers. We need qualified, biblical type of leaders to put into these roles to help keep the people on track, safe, and calm. So Moses had been given that advice, but he didn't pay attention to it. So that's why he's having this meltdown in the book of Numbers chapter 11. But eventually he does listen, because Exodus 18 goes on to say, Moses did listen to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. He chose able men from all Israel, made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties and tens. They judged the people at all times. Any hard cases they brought to Moses, but any small matter they decided among themselves. So he didn't put it to practice a year ago, but he will put it into practice now in the book of Numbers, chapter 11, when God comes down and tells him he should be doing this sort of multi-level leadership. Verse 16 of Numbers 11. Let's continue the story of what happened at Kibroth Hatta'ah shortly after they left Mount Sinai. He who is said to Moses, gather for me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them be take their stand there with you. And I will come down and talk with you there, and I will take some of the spirit that's on you and put it on them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you may not bear it yourself alone. So this is where God says, you take those 70 leaders that are supposed to be over the people of Israel anyway. Because remember, the start of the Sanhedrin happened during the Exodus. The Sanhedrin is made up of 70 leaders from the tribes of Israel. So God says, you take those 70 men that are supposed to be leading Israel along with you. You bring them to the tent, and I am actually going to spread out the supernatural gifting of the Holy Spirit to them as well, so that they will be able to bear some of the burden with you. Now, I believe that Moses also, within a few days of this, started designating people right down to the leadership of families of 10, that is 10 family groups within all of these other subgroups. So he's going to see his leadership model given to him by God and by Reuel put in place eventually. But before we see that group of 70 show up, we have to deal with this whole food crisis thing. Because remember, this is all triggered because they're griping about food. So God says to Moses in verse 18, you say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall have meat. For you have wept in the hearing of he who is, saying, who will give us meat to eat? For it's better for us to be in Egypt. And therefore, he who is will give you meat, and you shall eat. So God says, this is what I want you to tell the Israelis, Moses. And God is not happy. He is the upset leader of a people that is completely out of control. They are thankless. So he says, you tell them, because they're griping that it would be better for them to be back in Egypt than to just keep having only manna to eat, that I'm going to give them more than manna. Verse 19, you shall not eat just one day or 2 days or 5 days or 10 days or 20 days, but a whole month. I'm going to give you so much meat that this is going to happen until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you because you've rejected he who is among you and has wept before him saying, why did we come out of Egypt? So God says, fine, you want to be this way? You want food? You want meat? I will give you so much meat, you will be sick of it. Because you need to understand how thankless you are acting at this point. For them to actually say, it would be better for us to still be slaves in Egypt than to just be eating this manna, is horribly rude to God. So Moses said, the people among whom I am number 600,000 on foot. And you've said, I'm going to give them meat that they may eat a whole month? Shall flocks and herds be slaughtered for them and be enough for them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them and be enough for them? So he's basically, God, where are we going to get enough meat for 30 days for all these people to eat? That would drain or put a big strain even on the animals that we have right now, that some of which they were using for sacrifices. Well, he who is, said to Moses, is he who is his hand shortened? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not. So Moses went and he told the people the words of he who is, and he gathered 70 men of the elders of Israel and placed them around the tent. And he who is came down in the cloud and spoke to him, took some of the spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. And as soon as the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not continue doing so. So they started speaking the words of God spontaneously. This is a special supernatural gifting that happens. It only happens this one time for them. They don't become prophets. This is just a sign that they are now the supernatural leadership within the nation of Israel. Now, two men remained in the camp, one named Eldad and the other Medad. And the Spirit rested on them, and they were among those registered, but they hadn't gone out to the tent, and so they prophesied in the camp. Now, why they didn't go, no one knows for sure. They might have been stubborn and refused to come when Moses called them, or they might have just been behind the time of the assembly and didn't quite make it. But this is where we'll have to take up the story tomorrow when we get back into God's Word.